Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to your day two Australian Open tennis podcast. There are 3 minutes remaining of day two. It is 11:57 p.m. as we come to you from Tennis Podcast Towers, Melbourne. Tennis, of course, being tennis, is still happening at Melbourne Park. And that might be the case for, well, who knows how many hours to come. Alexei Popperin, the latest Australian sensation, is currently doing battle on the John Cain Arena. Novak Djokovic is currently a set to the good on the Rod Laver Arena. And Casper Ruud looks, well, well on the way to victory on the second court. And if any of those matches develop into big stories, including the Australian sensation, Alexei Popperin, not quite sure what he would have to do to steal the international headlines, but Channel 9 over here is certainly very into what he's up to at the moment. But of course, if any of those develop into big headlines, we will be recording an addendum to this podcast. Don't worry, we won't leave you hanging. But we have one very big story that has dominated day two of the Australian Open. Myself, David and Matt will be talking about that in just a moment's time. First, I want to remind you that throughout this Australian Open, the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. On Location, of course, owns Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours, an iconic name in the tennis tour world, which has been developing world-class tennis holidays for nearly 50 years. They are the official tour operators of the BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells, where we will all be going in March for the very first time, and as well of the Miami Open presented by Itau, which follows on from Indian Wells. It's the second leg in the Sunshine Double, the back end of the Sunshine Double Donkey. That isn't how they officially sell themselves, but it's something to consider for the marketing team at the Miami Open. And if you would like to get yourself a package to go to either of those tournaments or any of the brilliant tournaments that Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours provide experience packages to, then friends of the Tennis Podcast get a 5% discount on all of their packages. So details of that are in our newsletter and in our show notes, how to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast if you're not already. And in the most hashtag humble way possible, if you do get yourself a package deal to come to Indian Wells, you'll also probably get to meet us.
Yeah, you will.
So can't comment on how good that would be.
How'd you say that without not sounding one of those people?
Well, it's can't done do now, it. David. It's done now.
You did a good job.
Let's talk tennis. A lot has happened today. Actually, not quite as much has happened as we might have wanted to happen, because heat, first and foremost, and then rain has really made it quite a stuttering day on the outside courts. But luckily, we're very spoiled with roofs and with air conditioning. Matt and I had a big debate earlier about whether it's roofs or roofs.
That is problem. I don't know. I'm 49 and I don't know.
No, we had to type it out and have a look at what looked right or
which,
not.
Which is it?
This isn't the dynamic content people have tuned into the podcast for, David.
But now everybody wants to know.
I don't think there is a categorical right or wrong, but roofs looked wrong written down.
Anyway, like roofs. with an F.
Whatever they are, there's three of them here, and thank goodness for that. So they have been able to get a good amount of tennis played and finished at Melbourne Park today, if not the full schedule. And one of those tennis matches that did get finished today was 35-year-old Andy Murray and his metal hip. 2,050 days since his last win over a top 20 player at a Grand Slam, beat Matteo Berrettini today 6-3, 6-3, 4-6, 6-7, 7-6 after saving a match point at 4-5 in the fifth set. And Matt is still chuckling about the backhand that Matteo Berrettini played on that match point. I met evil Matt today, David.
It's like the anti-backhand list moment.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. It's one of those where to say that Andy Murray saved the match point is actually wrong, really, isn't it? Because Matteo Berrettini fluffed his lines.
He did what you or I would do in that moment.
And honestly, Berrettini's backhand was so bad that we're forgetting how bad Andy Murray's drop shot was in that rally. He basically gave the ball to Matteo Berrettini to hit a winner on. And I think he just sees Murray move to cover the line and decides to change and flick it cross court. But he's got so much time on the ball on that backhand, and he just dumps it in the bottom of the net. It was horrible.
So offended by that backhand.
It was a shot that I think most club players, most social players, if they've got no pressure and they've got nobody watching them, would feel very confident about making.
Yeah, it's in the sort of pantheon of haunting tennis shots. You know, I think Matteo Berrettini should and will be thinking about that backhand for a while. It sort of reminds me of the Andy Roddick high backhand against Roger Federer.
And this was way backhand volley in the way worse.
And that was a hard shot. That's a hard shot in tennis. But, you know, I always think of that shot as must be haunting.
Yeah, I described it as a howler in commentary.
This was, that's exactly what it was.
I don't want to mislead you, folks.
Sorry to start on a bum note.
Don't want to mislead you.
Because it was a great match.
Lots
we
of
just had
really,
to get that out of our system.
I had to get it out of the way.
Lots of really good stuff happened this match. In fact, it was one of the incredible moments. It was one of those moments that will stay with me for an incredibly long time. Andy Murray leading by two sets, gets pegged back to level, and we go into the decider. Andy Murray with Matteo Berrettini with the momentum, and yet somehow Andy Murray was not to be denied. He found, in Matt's words on Twitter, the "I'm not fucking done yet" Andy Murray. He found that guy.
Yeah.
And it was extraordinary. Andy Murray still hasn't lost a match from two sets up since his Wimbledon debut in 2005.
Mm. And he deserved it. He deserved it, even though Berrettini hit that backhand into the net on match point. And it almost felt like Andy Murray, with that drop shot, was saying, "I can take no more, have it." I know he wasn't thinking that, really. He just messed up the execution. But it was almost as though he'd got nothing left, and then suddenly he was given a lifeline, and boy did he grasp onto it. But over the course of the match, he was the better player. He was the one who deserved to win that tennis match, and given everything else around it and all the years that he's been waiting for that moment, can't deny him.
Do you know, David, the closing words of Andy Murray's first answer in the press conference after that extraordinary match? He gave a long and effusive explanation of the match and how he felt and the emotions it evoked, all of that. And then he paused and looked the journalist who had asked the question, possibly Eleanor Crooks, Eleanor Crooks, looked her dead in the eye and said, "I deserved it. I deserved the win." And it was a real moment, wasn't it? It was a bit of a death stare. Eleanor was not for a moment suggesting he didn't deserve the win, but it was almost a warning shot across the bows. If there's anyone out there that thinks that I didn't deserve this win because Matteo Berrettini fluffed his lines at match point up, you're wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes this match so special. Like, not only the fact that he won it, but that he did something here that he hasn't been able to do since the hip surgery, which was sustain a really high level over five sets against a top, top player. You know, he's sort of been in this cycle, Murray, of playing quite well and falling short, or not quite being able to live with the top players anymore. And he'd only won 8 Grand Slam matches prior to this one since the hip surgery, and half of those were against James Duckworth and Basilashvili. He's beaten them each twice. He's also beaten Oscar Otter. He's beaten Emilio Nava, Francisco Cerúndolo, and Yoshihito Nishioka. And now he's beaten Matteo Berrettini. This is a different category of victory to what he's had in slams, you know, in the last 5 years, really. And yeah, metal hip, bloody knee, bloody elbow, 35 years old, and yet he still managed to find a way through it. And it was just a classic, stressful Andy Murray experience, you know, and all of his strength was on display and all of his vulnerability as well. And that is always such a potent, powerful combination. It's what makes him so incredibly compelling to watch, I think.
Some of the greatest pieces that have been written about Andy Murray, one by Jonathan Liu, I think, springs to mind, but they point out that he is the most mortal of all the godlike athletes. He does superhuman things as a mortal, as a man with a metal hip, as a totally frail human being that has been forced to confront his own sporting mortality long before he ever deserved to, really. And yet that context is exactly what makes just winning a match like this completely superhuman. You know, this is doing something that, you know, he'll never have 22 Grand Slams, he'll never have 21 Grand Slams, he'll never do a lot of the things that any of the big three have done, but none of them have ever done what he did today, and they probably hope they never have to. But, you know, he's got a metal hip.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, I remember with Petra Kvitova's run to the final here in 2019, when she lost to Naomi Osaka. The balance between just treating her as a normal tennis player, having a brilliant run, and also sort of wanting to point out after every single brilliant shot, you know, someone stabbed her in her racket hand a few years ago. You know that she still doesn't have full sensation and full mobility in the part of her body that grips the tennis racket. It's like that with Andy Murray. It's almost like, how can we be talking about this like it's a normal tennis match? He's had a hip replacement.
And the guy was done. The guy was done 4 years ago. He announced his retirement all but in front of us in a press conference. We were all there. And he tried to get onto a stool to speak to you after the match against Roberto Bautista Agut, and he could barely get on it. And he sort of hobbled off into the distance, and he looks anything but a world-class athlete. And all of the effort, all of the struggle has been for this moment. For this moment to finally stare down one of the top guys, take him on, best of five sets, Grand Slam, 5 hours, and beat him. And that's what he did today. Now, he doesn't want to end there, but goodness me, that was like watching Andy Murray of old today. Everything was there. The serve was potent, the racket ability from the back of the court, diverting, diffusing, turning the tables. It was just glorious to watch if you have ever enjoyed watching Andy Murray's tennis over the last 17 or 18 years.
Yeah, what does What does form even mean anymore? It turns out you can just speak it into existence, because Murray told us that he was, that he had this
form. He was feeling good.
And yet there was no evidence on the match court to suggest that he was playing like this, but my God, he was right, because this was... And I'm not only saying this because he ended up winning the match. This was the best I've seen Andy Murray play in such a long time, and he sustained it for the match. Like, I think he had a little drop-off in the third set, and that maybe slightly allowed Berrettini in. He had some break points, didn't he?
And Berrettini wasn't playing well today, overall.
No, indeed. And he was particularly bad in those first two sets. I think sets 4 and 5 was the match I was expecting, really. Close, competitive. I do think the conditions, it being moved indoors right at the last minute, ended up helping Andy Murray, and I think that was Berrettini's assessment as well, wasn't it?
It was, in a completely magnanimous way. He's not annoyed about the roof being closed. The roof, the rule is that when players suspended on the outside courts due to heat, and they've got a very complicated formula about what triggers that, it's not just about the temperature gauge. That is when the roofs close on the main show courts, and that decision was made, according to Matteo Berrettini, a couple of minutes before they walked on court. And Matteo Berrettini says, "Yes, it absolutely affected the match and how I started the match, but that's on me." He said, "I did not cope with that well at all." He said he was pretty appalled at himself at how he started that match. He was flat and listless, and Andy Murray just saw a piece of prey, didn't he? Somebody whose head he could crawl into and live rent-free for a couple of sets. And it was, you know, we talked about the Andy Murray that likes to exploit a weakness, and it was utterly ruthless in that regard. He was totally exposed out there for two sets, Matteo Berrettini. And then he goes off with his swanky Hugo Boss bag with fresh kit in it. Probably has a good talking to himself in the mirror, and good on him. He comes out the Matteo Berrettini that we were expecting to see today. And okay, it wasn't enough, but I'm glad he was able to perform and make Andy Murray feel like he really deserved. He played a top 20 player today. First two sets he didn't. Andy Murray can really feel like he beat a top 20 player the hard way.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, these slow starts are costing Berrettini in slams at the moment. Like, he's usually been really reliable in terms of beating players he should beat. I'd say he probably should beat Andy Murray. I think, you know, he'll be disappointed not to have won this match for sure. But I think back to the match he played against Nadal here last year. He was two sets down before he really started playing. He was two sets down against Casper Ruud at the US Open before he really found his game. Like, he needs to come out of the blocks faster, I think, in some of these big Grand Slam matches. That can be a takeaway, I think, for Berrettini from the last year. Like, you just can't afford to start like that. And he's doing it a little bit too often at the moment.
He did remind everyone in press that, you know, he was still suffering from that injury at the end of last season. He didn't have the off season he would have hoped to have. He was undercooked coming in to this swing. And actually although he was knackered, it was 4 hours, 49 minutes. He was pleasantly surprised at how he felt physically at the end of that match. He wasn't sure he was ready for a five-set match. And he said, "I did not lose that match physically. I lost it. I lost it in tennis terms and on rubbish backhand match point terms."
Just imagine what he'll feel like in bed tonight, thinking about that.
At least he doesn't have to have a row with Ila Tomljanovic about where he's doing his Tennis Channel interview in the morning. At least he hasn't got anyone telling him, "But I'm still in the Australian Open." Cold comfort, I'm sure. Just last one on Andy Murray. He was very keen to tell us in the press conference, wasn't he? It was a question from Mike Dixon. I think trying to ask, what is different? You know, clearly something is different. We saw it in you in the pre-tournament press conference. Despite you having no form, you felt like something is different. What gave you that conviction to feel that way? And it was this three-week training block that he committed to doing in Boca Raton in Florida with Ivan Lendl. It sounds like he led a very simple life, you know, a monk-like existence, basically, utter dedication. And that was the difference-maker, you know, different kind of training, totally blocking out everything else in his life. And he is a father of four that's on the road, you know, 10, 11 months out of the year. To take 3 weeks out of his off season and block out everything else in his life is an extraordinary additional commitment. And I hope that what happened today makes that worthwhile for him. I hope that feels like validation and vindication for that sacrifice.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So, five-time finalist Andy Murray through to the second round. You'll notice we are niftily avoiding chat about how far this run can go. I think we should just table that, I think, and enjoy this win, just as I hope Andy Murray does as well. Who knows, it could be more. We're just not going to go there yet.
Who's he got?
He has got either Thanasi Kokkinakis or Fabio Fognini. It looks very much at the moment like it'll be Kokkinakis, but that match has been rained off this evening, with Kokkinakis leading by a set, and I think with a very commanding lead in the second set.
So, I think it's more than that. I think he's two sets to love up and has a commanding lead in the third. I think it's Kokkinakis.
Right.
Unless Fognini does a 2015 US Open Nadal on him tomorrow.
It doesn't feel like he's got that in him anymore, does it?
No.
And Kokkinakis is playing very well, by the way.
He is, yeah. It'll certainly be music to Andy Murray's ears visually. Didn't work, did it? he'll
late.
Certainly be pleased to see that match has been carried over to tomorrow. Yeah. Because obviously Andy Murray's played 4 hours, 49 minutes. Is 35 years old, and if I haven't mentioned it enough, does have a metal hip. So needs all the physical edge he can get on whoever his opponent might be. The nine-time champion Novak Djokovic's long-awaited return to the Rod Laver Arena has happened. It was incident-free, both in the crowd and on the court. He was greeted extremely warmly, if not rapturously, quite frankly. He did have heavy strapping on his left left thigh, his left leg. It was heavier. It was slightly more alarming visually than I was expecting. But in terms of the performance, no cause for alarm at all against Roberto Carballes Baena.
That's right. We've just watched the final set of that match, in which I think he only lost 3 or 4 points. Once he had got firm control of the match, he never really let go. And by the end, he was in that really aggressive mode where, you know, we talk so much about Djokovic's defence, but actually he can just cut through players with his own ground strokes. And he was doing that by the end. Very, very straightforward final set there.
Less so for Casper Ruud.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Who, over your right shoulder, David, is in a battle with, well, we called it, guys, the best tennis player in the world, Thomas Mahach.
Yeah, based on about 3 rallies that we saw him play from the fence of his court. So we were feet away from him, side on.
He was breathtaking. He was making us gasp.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think most tennis players, when they play full out in practice with no need to sort of try to win points, but just hit, would take our breath away, yeah, a lot of them.
And that was kind of I'm being facetious. That was the point, yes, we were trying to make,
but,
wasn't
but
it?
But at the same time, he did make you feel as though anything was possible in those 5 minutes, didn't he? And he, I think he has an incredible eye, Thomas Mahach. He's able to dig out a ball that's coming at Timmy at incredible speed and divert it, and he manipulates it. And he's a nightmare. He's a nightmare for Casper Ruud right now, who was 2 sets to love up in this match, and now it's deep into a 4th set.
Seeing as we can't report on the result of this match as we're recording before it's concluded, maybe I'll just resort to gossip and tell you that Katerina Siniaková is sitting in the Thomas Mahach box.
Oh.
We know nothing more than that. I'm just stating the facts I see them.
We're all here for it.
We are all here for it. What else happened in the men's draw today? We got very briefly excited about Dominic Thiem, didn't we? Because he won a few games in the opening set, hit a couple of glorious backhands, flashes of brilliance, but just no match toughness whatsoever against Andrei Rublev today. And Rublev's just kind of the opposite, isn't it? He's nothing but match toughness. He doesn't have those peaks, those moments of, oh my goodness, look what he's just pulled off. But he just always brings his level relentlessly, doesn't he?
Is it ever going to happen for Dominic Thiem again?
I mean, I'm not ready for that conversation.
I just think it's a really important point. I just don't understand how somebody who was that good, and I know he's had an awful injury, but the injury is apparently healed. So I don't get it.
I do. As I understand it, there is an enormous mental element to a wrist injury. To gain the freedom of hitting, the burden-free way of playing the game, which is exactly, it's the only way Dominic Thiem can be effective with open shoulders. I understand that that is very, very hard with a wrist injury. I've got no experience of it. I'm just reporting back. Yeah, it might be worth, Laura Robson's out here, isn't she, working for Australian TV. If we bump into her, I'd try and get her thoughts on it.
We're going to try and find out.
I desperately hope, you know, we've made no secret of it, have we? We just love watching Dominic Thiem in full flow, and could end up being a bit tragic, actually, the second chapter of his career, and I desperately hope that's not the case. But
yeah, I mean, he was less downbeat in his press conference than I thought he might be. Like, I remember his press conference at the French Open last year when he'd lost in the first round there, and he was pretty distraught, really. This wasn't that. I think one of the frustrations was actually he picked up another injury during this match. He strained his sort of side or his ribs, actually to adjust his ball toss because of the sun. Because it was so sunny, he was having to throw the ball up in a slightly different way, and he said he made a slightly odd movement and he hurt himself. And that actually did seem to affect things in the match. He lost about 20 or 30 kilometres per hour on his serve after that. It wasn't particularly close before that anyway, but this just made it worse. He does appear to have a bit of an Andrei Rublev problem. Like, even when he was playing well, Dominic Thiem, in his US Open winning year, he lost a lot to Andrei Rublev. And he made the point that also it's a bad matchup. But to be honest, it's just the experience of watching him at the moment is a little bit dispiriting, because personally I really felt like he did have that freedom back in his game and he was swinging confidently at the end of last season. I watched him a lot because I'm very into Dominic Thiem being good again, and like you, I've sort of been curious as to why it's not happening. But it seems to me like a real lack of match toughness. It's like he's forgotten how to bring his best level at the big moments in matches. Like, it was so frail, you know. It was on serve in that first set, things were going fine, and then suddenly he just threw in a couple of really bad backhands and the shoulders started slumping and the body language went. There's no resistance, there's no defiance.
That's a good way of putting it.
So that, I think, is what needs to come back, because without that, He's half the player he was, a third of the player he was. He's so far from it. But, you know, he is confident that he's physically recovered. And I guess now he'll get on the clay in South America probably and just look to keep building.
Yeah, and I desperately hope he can do just that. On the same court, the John Cain Arena, Taylor Fritz came out after Rublev and Thiem. He was very, very good. Beat Nicolas Basilashvili in four sets. Dropped a set, but anyone can do that against Basilashvili. If he hits a purple patch, he just knocks you off the court, and more often than not, can't sustain it. Less good at art, Taylor Fritz, today.
Explain.
Well, he attempted to draw a sort of lock, or sort of padlock,
which apparently is a thing, sort of means you're locked in,
no way through me.
Yeah, maybe. So dialed in, focused,
locked in. Is it? It's a lock, it's a padlock.
I'll remember that. Yeah.
But what he actually drew was a sort of penis and a swivel.
There's really no other way of putting
it. I thought, how do I describe this? That is what he drew. He did at least own it on Twitter. Very amusing.
Drew a big bell end on the camera. Thanks very much, Taylor.
But he was good. I was. It was one of those where, because the Andy Murray match was happening, I feel like, you know, a match is really good in the first week of a slam when there's so much tennis going on, albeit a bit less today because of the weather. But Andy Murray's match had my complete attention, and that so rarely happens for a match in the first week of a slam because it's just so busy. But so I didn't get to see a huge amount of this, but from what I understand, Fritz hit over 30 aces in this match, the most he's ever hit in a match. And as you said, the one set he did drop was just Basilashvili sort of firing winners left, right and centre, and I think Fritz did pretty well to win that in four. It sounded like a really high quality encounter.
Could I just insert a quick gripe here, because we've recorded a whole sort of two-thirds of this podcast without me having a gripe. Why isn't the stat that we're given percentage likelihood, probability of player hitting ace on any given serve? Like, serves per match is a useless statistic to me. I need aces as a percentage of serves hit. That is what I'd like to say.
I don't know.
Like, the stat, like, that's the most aces you've ever hit in a match. Well,
if the match was 6 hours long.
Well, exactly.
What good's that?
Yeah, but I suppose, you know, it wasn't 6 hours long.
No,
so clearly,
I mean, okay,
he did have
it's
a
not
good
completely redundant, but it's not the stat that I want.
No, sure. I understand.
Mm. Alexander Zverev needed 5 sets today on his Grand Slam return following that horrific ankle injury last year. Came through 6-4 in the fifth against the Peruvian lucky loser Juan Pablo Varillas. That was quite exciting for quite a while before Zverev prevailed. Holger Rune, straight sets for him and straightforward against Filip Krajinovic, was talking in press conference afterwards about how the Netflix cameras are now following him, and he's very Tsitsipas about it. He is not disguising how delighted he is. There was a very sort of coy question: what do you think of the Netflix show? Would you be up for participating in the future? And you said, oh yeah, they're filming me now. couldn't wait to get that out. Casper Ruud, by the way, has broken in the fourth, and all being well, looks like he will beat the world's best tennis player and make it through to round number two. Elsewhere today in the women's draw, what did we have? We had Ons Jabeur avoiding a bit of a banana skin against the former French Open semi-finalist Tamara Zidanshek, who, well, former French Open semi-finalist, tells you she is capable of producing extremely good tennis. She's got a great forehand, really nice technique on that shot. She's got good intensity, hasn't she? She came out for this match really up for it, whereas Ons Jabeur came out with some pretty suspicious-looking strapping on her knee, didn't she, David? We were all worried about her back, and out she comes with this dodgy-looking knee.
And she was grumpy throughout the match. She was not confident. She didn't seem to have a clear idea of the best way to go about winning the match. I think she wasn't feeling the ball the way she normally was. There were drop shots she was hitting that were going halfway up the court and just asking to be put away. Zidanshek just played a really solid match. She was the opposite of everything that Jabeur was. And frankly, she really could have won the match because she had set points in the first set. She was pushing her throughout and she didn't get the job done. I mean, in the end, once Jabeur had got her measure in the deciding set, it was quick, but Jabeur looked stressed throughout that match, and I mean that may well be to do with the injury as well, that if she's not feeling quite right physically. But you know, it was there was something that Coco Vandeweghe in commentary alongside me said on BBC Radio, was she says sometimes you just got to fake it. She says she's not being the Ministry of Happiness right now and all the rest of it that she talked about at Wimbledon. She doesn't feel like that, and it's fine to not feel good, not to feel happy out on the court, but sometimes you've got to just give positive reinforcement down the other end of the court just to show you're in the moment and that you are there and you are going to prevail, because she was not sending off great body language today, but she did win.
Is there cause for alarm for you going forward, David?
Well, based on that, yes. I do think, though, she's shown how much mettle she has in the last 6 or 8 months. She didn't play that well at the US Open for several rounds. True. She still reached the final. And I think if she's not physically hindered, ultimately, throughout the whole 2 weeks, she can probably manage a few rounds and then maybe hit her straps.
It's certainly the more open side section of the draw, isn't it? So, you know, if she can work her way through this knee injury, whatever it is that's going on, you know, she's going to be a contender for sure, but it's going to be a big question mark hanging over her. Speaking of contenders, I give you Aryna Sabalenka.
She just looks devastating, doesn't she, man?
1-4 today over Teresa Martinsova. First up on the Rod Laver Arena. I've heard that she got a biomechanical coach in to deal with her serve, which I find interesting because it seemed pretty apparent to me that the serving issues were mental. You know, she knows how to serve. You don't just suddenly forget how to serve. But then I also totally understand the need to feel like you're doing something
and
about
maybe
it.
Maybe that's mental. Well, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, if you get the coach in, you think you've solved it.
You know, the placebo effect is very real, you know, and frankly, whatever works.
There was a good quote I heard from her after this one, that she's now trying to just concentrate on every point rather than getting angry about things not going perfectly. And I know that's, you know, time-honored method of achieving long-term goals, but it's not something I ever really expected to come out of her mouth.
Well, that is something that we've talked about with Petra Kvitova before, isn't it? Who has a very similar style of play, all or nothing type swashbuckling stuff. And she, one of the secrets to her success, particularly in her heyday, has been her extraordinary ability to just accept the downsides of that style of play, shrug off the balls that hit the back fence. Because there are more than those than with a Caroline Wozniacki or a Simona Halep. But, you know, it's rough with the smooth, isn't it? And it's knowing one's game inside out and being pragmatic about that. And something Petra Kvitova has always had and something Sabalenka is clearly having to learn. I'm quite enjoying this character arc, this story arc for Aryna Sabalenka. It's quite compelling.
Totally. Yeah, she was never more compelling to me than at the Australian Open last year, where she got through several rounds despite having sort of zero game. And yet she sort of worked really hard in the last year to get back to a place where now she's got a lot of game. And if Aryna Sabalenka is winning matches without any fuss, that is bad news, I think, for everyone else in the draw. Because, as you said, it's the fuss, it's the ups and downs which have sort of held her back, I think, sometimes. She was brilliant today. And just imagine having point-ending power in the heat that she was playing in. I mean, that must be such an advantage. I was sort of watching that match, and I was watching Elise Cornet and Leila Fernandez at the same time. And Fernandez Cornet was a grueling encounter, you know, long rallies. Neither of them have huge weapons. I mean, Fernandez did actually hit quite a lot of winners, but there were long rallies. But Sabalenka, it was just like, well, the point's over now, and I'm not messing about in this heat.
One way or another, get me ending.
Get me into the air conditioning, and, you know, I'll move on. And yeah, I think she's in a really good place, Sabalenka. And she does have experience of going deep in slams. You know, she has been there and done it. She's not been to a final, but I think we should definitely be keeping watching and talking about Sabalenka. She feels like a big contender here.
Fernandez Cornet, by the way, since you mentioned it, was very good, wasn't it? It wasn't disappointing. It didn't quite develop into what I thought it could be because Fernandez was so good.
Yes. I think we're all there for the drama.
Mm.
And it wasn't actually that dramatic. It was just good and high quality. Fernandez did say afterwards that she's quite good friends with Cornet. So maybe we shouldn't have been expecting drama and aggro.
It feels like she could be her protege.
I don't want them to be friends.
I don't know.
This is tennis and its politeness problem again, isn't
no,
it? Stop being friends, everyone.
I think Cornet's developing Fernandez.
Right.
But, it was a slow start from Fernandez. She was a breakdown, but then she played a really clean, controlled match. And I was just a bit confused about what to expect from Fernandez just from looking at her results in Auckland, because she won a couple of matches there barely dropping games, and then she lost very handily to Iseline Bonaventure of Belgium. But I realised, and I probably should have known because it was Auckland, that was a match that was moved indoors, so how much can you actually tell? And I think those conditions definitely would have suited Bonaventure more. So maybe those first two matches where she was barely losing games were an indicator that actually she's playing well. She's in good form, and I think we'll get a real test of that because we've got another yes please round two, haven't we? Leila Fernandez versus Caroline Garcia.
Oh, hello. When's that?
It'll be in 2 days' time, oh. David.
I don't want to watch that.
Caroline Garcia, incidentally. We might, this is on the basis of one match against Catherine Sabov, okay, you know, you can only beat the opponent in front of you, but I think we might be seeing end of season Garcia at the beginning of a season.
Well, I hate to say I told you so, but after one match.
Blooming good match, though.
Yep.
Yeah, and she played a couple of good matches at the United Cup as well. Yeah.
No, nobody wants to say too much,
I'm not saying anything
they?
Else.
Okay.
I got her in the final.
Well, that was dynamic listening. Caroline Garcia is playing well, everyone, just to let you know.
Yep.
Conversely, Garbini Muguruza, her woes continue. Yet another deciding set loss for her, 6-1 in the third against Elisa Mertens. Albeit, that is a tough draw. She's a tough opponent. It's the manner of the losses, isn't it, Matt? And it's the pattern. She came to press immediately. I know you you had listening to the audio of that. It was mostly Spanish press in there, I think. Tough scenes.
Yeah, there is just so much baggage now with Muguruza because the same thing keeps happening. She keeps being in a winning position, unable to close it out, gets herself involved in a third set and loses it. She's lost 8 deciding sets in a row. She hasn't won one since Dubai of last year, and a lot of them have not been close. 5 of those 8 deciding sets she's lost have been 6-1, including the one today, including the one at the start of the year against Andreescu, and both today and against Andreescu, she'd served for the match in the second set and not been able to close it out. It's just a pattern. She's losing in exactly the same way sort of every single time, and it's so just painful to watch, and it must be doubly painful to play. And she's at a loss. She doesn't have the answers. It's quite compelling to watch, you know, someone with a sort of Hall of Fame career not be able to close out matches. And it's not for the want of trying. It's not like her game totally falls apart. It's just a lack of confidence and a baggage, and sort of just, it's almost like you just know it's going to happen, and she knows it's going to happen.
And the players against her, I'm sure, just
know
think,
it as well.
It's gonna
stick
happen.
In there,
I'm
hang
just
in there,
not go and away here.
So, I think what will happen is her ranking is going to drop quite a bit now. I mean, she was already unseeded, but you know, she's talking about playing not really lower level events, but really just be a bit out of the spotlight. She was saying, I think, and just keep working. But she said before, she doesn't know whether to take time off or to keep trying and playing matches. She's
so tough.
She's really, really sort of stuck at the moment. And I feel for her because we know what she's capable of. And it doesn't feel like it's close to changing at the moment. It's been like this for a year.
It's tough to see, and we wish her well. What have we got for you tomorrow at Melbourne Park? We have the full schedule out now, and it's a mess, quite frankly.
If you've got a grand pass tomorrow,
so
you're having
many
a great
matches
time.
From today. I can't pick out a first round match from a second round match. I'll tell you what's on Rod Laver Arena, and we'll take it from there, folks. We've got Iga Świątek against Camila Osorio, and then Jessica Pegula against Alexandra Sasnovich, and third up, Rafael Nadal against Mackenzie McDonald. Day session again for Nadal. I wonder if he's requesting day session because of the conditions, because of how the balls are playing. I don't know, but you know, generally speaking, what Rafa requests, he gets. And yeah, he's played twice in the day now, so I wonder. Emma Raducanu against Coco Gauff headlines the night session, and rightly so. Yes, please, can't wait. It's followed by Stefanos Tsitsipas against Rinki Hijikata, the Australian wildcard. Matt's tactic for predictions this week is to choose Australian sensations. So I expect you to predict Rinki Hijikata to pull off well, the upset tomorrow.
Well, the problem is I don't know whether the strategy has failed yet because Max Purcell is still playing against Emil Ruusuvuori. He's losing, so I'm a bit worried about the tactic.
He's got a long time to think about the fact that he's
yeah,
losing,
but,
hasn't he?
No, so I have abandoned that tactic and just gone for a very good player tomorrow to win.
The pick of the matches on the second court for me is definitely Karolina Muchova against Danielle Collins.
Yeah, I mean, under normal circumstances, if they were both fully fit and
well,
match
David,
fit.
Karolina Muchova is never fully fit.
I know,
fit, so.
But I'm just saying that should be a great match, yeah. But yet I fear it may well not be because neither one of them looks 100%. Well, never does.
Way to hype it up, David. That's last on the second court, if you want to watch that.
Maybe they'll cancel each other out and just both be kind of like 60%
wanted to
good.
Pick out Elena Rybakina, who plays on the John Kaner Arena. She's last on there tomorrow against Kaya Juvan. I'm pleased she's been given that billing, just in principle, as the Wimbledon champion. And also because I think one of those three show courts scheduling there tomorrow was going to be a huge advantage because of the rain that's forecast to come. So, and I think she's earned that advantage. She played on court 13 on Monday. I'm not saying she should headline Rod Laver Arena, but she shouldn't be out on court 13.
No.
She shouldn't. It feels like, I don't know what it is actually, but she was outspoken, wasn't she, at the US Open about not getting the respect she deserved in terms of court assignments. And it seems to have got worse, not better, since then. So John Kane Arena for her tomorrow. God, there's so much happening.
I was just thinking about how I said what a great grounds pass it is. Except it's going to rain all day.
That is true.
It is going to rain all day.
And there's going to be 30-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't whet anyone's appetite for what's going on the outside courts because none of it might happen. Oh, I know what I want to end on. I'd like to say hello to Pam Shriver, friend of the show, Pam Shriver, who's working with Donna Vekic at the moment, certainly at this tournament. She was courtside for Donna Vekic's opening round match against, bear with me here, because quite honestly, this is a player I'd never heard of before, Oksana Selek Mateva, a 20-year-old Russian player, ranked 179 in the world. This match, after several other delays throughout the day, this match was literally going on all day. And Pam's juggling another job with ESPN, by the way. This match was suspended for rain at 5-1 in the deciding set tiebreak.
It still hasn't finished.
It has not finished.
Who's winning that at the moment?
Donna Vekic, okay. At least. That's a that long helps. Time to think about a 5-1 lead, isn't it?
Pam's got some coaching to do, is what we're saying, in the next 12 hours.
Go on, Pam.
We back you, Pam.
Go on, Pam.
Go on, Pam. So, yeah, look, hopefully the rain holds off tomorrow, and if it does, everyone's in for a treat because the schedule is brilliant. But thank goodness for roofs.
One day we'll know what it is.
We'll never be able to end that debate. And that's it, I think, for your day two tennis podcast from Melbourne Park. I need to say that we have our Australian Open mascot, Cordelia. I posted our predictions presided over by Cordelia on Instagram today, so head over there to check those out. And lots of other top-notch content, though I do say so myself.
Yeah, you're quite good at that.
We have our mascots. David's got Maisie.
Right, Maisie, nailed it. Maisie Murray. Yeah. Big win.
Fair play, David. That was impressive.
It was impressive.
Oh, thanks very much.
Very impressive.
Pick up on Andy Murray body language and change your mind.
Mm. We picked up on it, but weren't brave enough.
Wasn't convinced.
I mean, I'm not sure how much the body language contributed to the backhand from Berrettini, but anyway, all the rest of it.
Matt Darwin. Well, it's all
we're
sort of hanging in the balance.
It's all hanging
Garmin
in the balance.
Is very much in Pam Shriver's shoes at the moment, isn't he? Doesn't know.
Yes.
Doesn't know what the night will hold.
Darwin, exactly. Have a look at what you could have won.
Xenia, for me, we were royally stitched up by Anna Karolina Schmiedlova, who decided to do a thing today and beat Martina Trevisan.
She's suddenly played out of her mind.
Yeah.
When she knew Catherine picked the opponents.
Absolute stitch up. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks, Jamie, Drew and Hannah. Thank you very much to them for being our executive producers. And we've got shout outs, Matt.
We have Mary Grant, who's in California.
Like Mary Carrillo.
Yeah.
Hello, Mary. Hello to both Marys.
Yeah. We love Marys.
And like Grant... Oh, well, I've got a Shaps.
Yeah, I was thinking Shaps. Not
that's
good.
Not
it's not good.
No,
work,
it's not where I wanted to go. My mouth went into a place
He has no business on this podcast.
Absolutely not. I'm sorry, Mary, for even mentioning Grant Shaps. She's in California. She probably doesn't know who
blissfully
he is.
Unaware.
No, don't Google him. Whatever you do, don't Google him. Thank you, Mary.
We've also got Alison Rowe, who is in Wellington, New Zealand.
Oh, lovely stuff.
Like Alison Risk.
Yeah.
Yes, she was playing today. I think her match might have been suspended.
Fairly safe bet.
She was a massive underdog in that match, I seem to recall, when we were looking up the numbers.
Yes, against Marketa Vondroušová.
Yeah. Mm. Who is somebody I still think should be...
Inexplicable.
...getting lots more results.
We don't have time now to
understand to go into
the career of
But Alison Rowe, thank you so much for being a friend of the pod.
We've also got Wilson Lee, who is in San Jose.
Right, Wilson.
Hello, Wilson.
Wilson says that he's not named after a tennis racket, but he says, most parents would name their boat after their kids, but my parents named me after a boat, the SS Wilson, the ship aboard which my dad immigrated to sunny California.
I love everything about that. I love
Wilson's
the nominative
cool.
determinism. I love that my dad is going to want to go back in time and name me after a boat.
Yeah. Mr. Whittaker and Wilson are going to be pals.
I absolutely love that. Hello, Wilson, and thank you for being a friend of the pod.
We've got Christiane Savoy in Moncton, Canada.
Wow, that's
like
a lovely name.
Jacqueline Christiane that got pounded by Jessica Pegula yesterday.
Did she? I don't know who that is. But yes, I was maybe... distracted at the time for the 42 minutes that it took. Christiane, thank you so much for being a friend of the pod.
And finally, we've got Tarsine in Toronto, Canada.
All right, Tarsine.
Sorry that I don't have any new material, Tarsine, but I'm going to say the thing that I always say when we have shout-outs from Toronto, Canada. I've dangled off the top of a building there.
She has. I've seen the photo. She looks terrified.
Was terrified. Yep. Sobbed all the way through it.
Yep.
Thank you, Tarsine. Lovely name.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
Bedtime.
Right. Bedtime. Big day tomorrow. First round, second round. It's all happening. We will be there to wrap up all of it for you at the end of the day. We will speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.